If you've ever looked at a film of the Kennedy assassination, I mean, really looked, then you've seen him. He's standing in the deep shadow of the Texas School Book Depository doorway on the top landing behind the columns, watching the motorcade go by. This mysterious figure is there in the Vigman film as well. He's there in the Darnell film. Nobody in the Warren Commission ever asked who he was. Nobody on the House Select Committee on Assassinations ever asked. For 63 years, that figure has been hiding in plain sight. The JFK research community calls him Prayer Man. And there is now a serious document-driven case that Prayer Man is Lee Harvey Oswald, which would mean Oswald was not on the sixth floor firing a rifle. My guest today is the researcher who has done more than anyone alive to build that case. Bart Camp spent over a decade on this, and it's an impressive book over my head here. He started his career as a photographer in the Netherlands and Milan, which turns out to be exactly the right background for reading degraded film frames. Bart Camp is not a fly-by-night JFK assassination author. This guy has serious bona fides, and he's been in the game for a while. Bart is a 2016 Mary Farrell New Frontier Award recipient and 2017 Dealey Plaza UK Excellence Award recipient. He works closely with Malcolm Blunt, who we talked about in our last episode and in the Spy Games episode. Many of you may know Malcolm Blunt as the foremost archival researcher of the JFK record at the National Archives. Bart Camp's book, Prayer Man, More Than a Fuzzy Picture, was published in August of 2023, and Jim DiEugenio, my co-author on the JFK assassination chokeholds, called it a credible effort that goes literally to the heart of the basics of the JFK case, which is a big deal because Jim DiEugenio does not like a lot of what he reads. Today we're gonna do two things. First, we're gonna talk about who Prayer Man is. And then second, we're going to talk about what may be the single most important undercover story in the whole case, which is the idea that the second floor lunchroom encounter between Oswald and Marion Baker may never have happened at all. Certainly not in the way
That's
that was
correct.
described.
Never
Bart
happened.
Camp, welcome to Solving JFK.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thank you very much, Matt, and good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon, wherever you are, who's
Yes, sir.
watching. Thank you
Yeah.
very much for having me.
So what pulled you into the JFK assassination? I know your background is in photography.
Well, this started actually when I was about 11 years old, maybe 12. This was in the second half of the 70s, and there was a documentary about the HSCA happening, something around the HSCA. I was 11 years old, and there's a bit of I remember we only had a black and white TV at that time, and they were zooming in into the bushes of the Nix film to see whether it was muzzle flash or was it just leaves moving, and that there was a shooter over there, and that got my interest, and I was fascinated about that. And then the following years, you go to the hairdresser, you get your hair cut, and there's magazines lying about, and there's an article about Kennedy, this, that, and the other. And then you're just fascinated by close-ups of the enlargement of the Zapruder film and so forth. And then the Stone film really kicked it off because I watched that first in Vienna. where I fell asleep during it, and then I watched it again when I went back to the Netherlands to watch it, and rented it on the VHS, and I read two of the three books the movie was based on. I read Crossfire, and I read
Trail
let
of
me know.
Assassins.
Yeah, the Jim Garrison book. Yes, okay, so I read that. Thank you. And I was quite interested, and I read a few bits about it. Then, with the internet, I think one of my first searches was JFK assassination or Fletcher Prouty. Both of them, they were I was interested in. And I did that for about from 95 till 98, and then I had enough of it. I had enough of the conspiracy theories and so forth, and all the anger, this, that, and the other. And I became angry, and I was like, you know what? What's the point of getting angry all the time? Blah, blah, blah. But that's only because you believe all that stuff. So I stepped away from it, and I stepped away from it for about 12 years. I have had interactions with some of it, but nothing like where I went, oh yeah, I did that for X amount of time. It wasn't until 2013, the 50th, that I put something together in with a technology, a multi-touch app, which allowed to deal with how to describe that, with various facets of media, being PDF movies like MP4 or photographs, but I could use them in a multi-touch environment, basically in one window. Instead of having three different apps running, I could just put them in one app and I could play with that. So I could present that. So, in a nutshell, it was PowerPoint on steroids. That's the way you have to look at it. And that was back then in 2013. And then I started reading books a bit more, and I re knew about Prayer Man. But I was never really serious about it at that point in that year, 2013, because I was busy on that whole thing with the multi-touch application. And once I'd done that, I was like, oh, I need a break. And then January 2014, I just started like thinking, like, am I going to continue with this or am I going to quit? And I was like, well, there's only one thing worth continuing, and that's if Prayer Man's Oswald. And I looked at the photograph, and this is a worse copy of what we have now. And I went, this guy really looks like Oswald. And I'm going, if anything can solve this, it's this. I mean, there's nothing else, because if Oswald's innocent, the entire case falls apart like a deck of cards, and it just flatlines all of it. So I was like, well, there's nothing else, because I was aware of, say, the autopsy stuff and all that, but there's no death blow. There's no magic bullet that basically says that's it, it's over, this is the evidence, and therefore you can't do this, or it's wrong, because of lack of evidence. Whereas the thought, if that picture, if that it gets clearer, then we might have a chance. So the first thing I did then was try to obtain as many high-res copies of the films as I possibly could. And it wasn't just the Wiegman film or the Darnell film, but it was also the Zapruder film. I just tried to find all the documentaries in high-res format, in 1080, but sometimes in 720. And that was what, back in 2013, oh, about 2015, 2016, I started properly researching this. I was going to do a book in 2015 already, and I was like, oh, I've got to do a book on this. And Stan Dane was there as well, as part of our crew. And he says, I'm doing a book. And I was like, right, okay. Oh, if you're doing a book, what's that going to be? But his book was focused on a thread that's called, on a forum called the Education Forum, which is about Oswald, which was started by Bill Kelly, actually. Rest in peace. Who it was entitled Oswald Leaving TSBD. And there was just his picture. And that got Sean Murphy involved, and a bunch of others. And I wasn't a member then. I couldn't become a member. It was closed at that point. I didn't join until about a year or a year and a half after that, in 2015, probably. But that thread was also that put Prayer Man on the map for me. Like, oh, right, this is about this guy. And I was like, and I looked at it and went, well, yeah, this guy looks like Oswald. I mean, just looking at it. And this is a bad copy of the Darnell film.
Let's jump into to Prayer Man, because I think it is something that I'll say from my perspective, it's really misunderstood, because You've got the Billy Lovelady thing, which is like, yes, everyone knows that's Lovelady. That's not really disputed anymore. But then you also have another person next to them that some people think is Prayer Man. Then you have the person who really is Prayer Man is sort of in the background.
Prayer
So,
Man is in the shadow. He's
yeah.
in the shadow, and sometimes his hands, there's like this zone of transition where the sunlight is coming in, and it's just like the rays are just, he's not fully in caught by the sunlight, by the rays, but you have that zone in between where the darkness really, the shadow really starts, and you have like that overflow of those rays, basically. It's my opinion at this point. I don't have the real image to support this, but he's drinking. He's got a bottle in his hand. And that's why you have the highlight. It's not a camera because the bottle is moving to his face and back. We have close-ups of the Wiegman film where we can see that he moves with his one arm, that he basically the bottle's moving to the face where he's drinking from the bottle while the motorcade is passing by with Wiegman filming it. And then you've got the Darnell film, and the Darnell film is anything is under 10 seconds after the Wiegman film. And it's always been a thing. I mean, Prayer Man is just something that is just a result of people seeing all these other people, and Black Dog Man, and who's the other guy behind the picket fence and all that? What's
Badge man, yeah.
yeah, Badge. Gosh, spare me. But anyway, there's Stetson Man. You can see in the picture behind me. And this is because it's mirrored. This white suited guy, they call him Stetson Man. So a lot of people have like there's a lot of individuals that have certain names. And Prayer Man was basically concocted by Sean Murphy. I'm not happy about the name, but it is what it is. And it just became interesting because, and now I'm going to mix both your things together because Prayer Man was investigated because the second floor lunchroom encounter was dodgy because nobody believed there was a select few who said there's something really wrong about this second floor lunchroom encounter. And it just doesn't make any sense. If you look at the statements that were made and the Warren Commission report, the hearings, the interviews, then you already look at it and go, this doesn't ring right at all. And then you start looking at the DPD statements, then you start looking at the FBI statements, and you start putting everything in a chronological order because that's the beauty of everything. Once you get this documentation, you go, okay, on November 22nd, this was set. On the 23rd, they came up with this. On December the 8th, all of a sudden, this makes its entry into the evidence. And you go, this is a bit fishy.
Yeah, as I was reading your book, the main thing that I kept thinking is, I wish you would have written this when I covered this topic on the podcast because I just missed you by about a year and a half. But
Okay.
I was telling you in season four we're going to go back and do just deep dives into sort of open things and things that I didn't cover before. And this whole conversation about the second floor, I think, needs to be really focused on by the community because I think you're right. There is an open question there. And just to underline the point here, if it isn't clear to everyone, it's that if it's Oswald, if Prayer Man is Oswald, then clearly Oswald can't be on the sixth floor. There's a whole other body of evidence about why Oswald's not on the sixth floor, in addition to this, right? There's a whole separate thing about the girl on the stairs, et cetera, all these reasons
Yeah,
why he
yeah,
couldn't have
yeah.
been there. I say all that to say that it's a pretty big deal. And so it's definitely worth covering. And it's not just from one photo.
No, it's two films. That's
Right.
what it is. And the Darnell film, which you see the enhancement of as my background, it has the yeah, the possibility to show that that's Oswald by de-blurring what's happening in that top corner there and the top left corner of those stairs. And I've already been dabbling with artificial intelligence using deep learning techniques and so forth. I'm only like in the beginning of doing all this. I had an incredible hectic job. I didn't do anything for 2 years besides collecting evidence until a few months ago. I was made redundant and I was like, you know what? And I started using AI. And then what I did was I wanted to bulletproof my book. And what I did was I just kept chucking everything in. And it has also created something that I hadn't seen before yet. Even though all that research, the AI agent came back to me and goes, but hold on a minute. This document says this, yet that document, and this is about the second floor lunchroom encounter. Bill Shelley went in the afternoon at 1:30. He escorted Danny Archie Garcia and Bonnie Rae Williams to the DPD in the patrol car. And there's footage of him walking towards that car. And Shelley is there and he gives an affidavit, writes down very basic about what happened at St. Forth. But then Oswald is being paraded in. And that's when he says, oh, he's one of us. He works for us. Oh, yeah. Well, he killed a cop. Boom. That's when the second affidavit comes handwritten. And in that handwritten affidavit, he writes that he spoke to Truly and that Truly had not seen Oswald. A contemporary handwritten statement, affidavit, and says, I didn't, he said he didn't see Oswald. And he also cements this but with the typed up affidavits. At the same time, when Oswald's being interrogated and he relays certain information, the FBI agents, Bookout and Hostie, relay this to Dallas FBI, and Dallas FBI calls Nat Pinkston, who's inside the TSPD, and Pinkston does a affidavit with Roy Truly, the superintendent of the Texas School Book Depository. And that's where the second floor lunchroom encounter is invented. And this is in the same time frame, roughly in the same time frame. So either Shelley is lying through his teeth, yeah, and just makes this up, which is hard to believe in a contemporary statement, yeah, handwritten, cemented as well as a typed up one. And then you have an FBI agent talking to the superintendent, and then all of a sudden, that second floor lunchroom encounter is created. And that's what that second lunchroom encounter is used to suppress and destroy Oswald's alibi of standing outside and watching the presidential parade. And we know that because during that first interrogation, there are notes made by James Patrick Hostie, the FBI agent, and it was also aware of who Oswald was. He had a file on Oswald. And he writes in a pre-report on the back of Dallas PD affidavit paper. So he's got this block of blank affidavit notes where they're pre-typed and all that. So you just fill in your name and the date and all that. But he turns it around and he writes down the Oswald evidence that he sees in the room next door Fritz's office. Now, there's two things that are just absolutely missing. And the first one is the Heidel ID. There's no mention of a Heidel ID at all. Yeah. So that's going to be really difficult that if that card isn't there, because I'll tell you what, if Bookout had seen the evidence there in front of him and there was a Heidel ID, Bookout would have written that down right there and then and would have walked back in and said, yo, man, what is this? Yeah. Or can you, or go to Fritz and go, hey, have you seen this? There's a second ID with a second name. There's no mention of a Heidel ID until the 23rd in the first interrogation, just before 11:30. Yeah, the first interrogation starts about 10:30. And if you look at the notes of this interrogation, there is no mention. The second item is in that, sorry, in that statement that Hostie is writing, he also writes a pre-report. And in that pre-report, Oswald had said that he went to the lunchroom to get a Coke for his lunch. Yeah, not after, for his lunch, which is 12 o'clock. And then went outside and watched the P parade, the presidential parade. Now, This document, although it came out in 1996 and Harold Weisberg had a copy of it, he was too angry to see it, see the forest through the trees, and he didn't see it. And I only found out about it in 2019 when I found the document in the Malcolm Blunt archives. And I saw it and I screamed it out at the top of my lungs that I found gold. And even Malcolm went to the front room and goes, what? And I go, dude, this is amazing. This is handwritten notes. And this is later on also repeated in the so-called joint Bukout and Hosty report. So that evening they make a report together. And again, it states exactly where Oswald was. That Oswald said he was on the first floor. Yeah, and everybody needs to know if you go up the steps, yeah, that's the first floor. That's where it starts. Yeah. It's a really funny thing. There's no ground floor. There's only a basement. I mean, the ground floor is outside the building. But inside the building, you just have the first floor and the basement. There is no ground floor.
I found it really interesting that the Warren Commission didn't even bring up that Oswald said he was on the first floor. Because they could always say, but he's a liar. Because, you would think they would want to at least say
No,
what he
it was
said.
swapped over. You
But it
see,
was, yeah.
on the 22nd, the statements say where he was. On the after Oswald's death, Bukout makes another report about the whole thing and does a 180 on the whole thing and basically invents and takes over the second floor lunchroom encounter. You see, the information that came to Nat Pinkston inside the Texas School Book Depository had to come from Bukout and Hosty, who were present in the first interrogation, because Oswald made mention that Warren Caster had come past and he had two rivals with him. Yeah, one was a 22 and the other one was, I think, I don't know. But anyway, and Oswald made mention of that. So the first question of the interview that Nat Pinkston had with Roy Truly was asking him about those rivals. Warren Caster had an office inside the TSBD as well.
Yeah, and just I want to revisit one more thing you just said too about Hedel. 10:30 a.m. on Saturday is the first time that shows up, but he shows up
No,
in
it's just before 11:30. I mean, they go through the
the.
entire interrogation, and at the end, there's like a loose mention of Heidel.
But aren't they looking for the records at the gun manufacturer at Klein's Sporting Goods like Saturday
This is
morning
even
before
better.
that?
This is even cuter. The Heidel, the order for the Malika Carcano was not found until the 23rd at 7:30. So, and there's a bunch of FBI documents that have been recently released at the Mary Farrell website. And they're beautiful because there are at least 50, if not more, documents. It's about just under 800 documents. About 50 odd, between 50 and 100, are only about the rifle. The serial number, the branding inside, the markings. It doesn't say Melica Carcana anywhere. And their search is all over trying to find out where this rifle is coming from. It's beautiful. I mean, if the rifle is your thing, which it isn't to me, but for some people, a rifle is mega important. Well, that's a presentation by itself, just to see how the FBI dealt with it all on the 22nd, from the 22nd till the 26th. It's beautiful.
Bart, I want to ask you to address the prayer man theory haters, which their standard line is, yeah, if there were all these people on the steps and Oswald was there on the steps, then why does no one mention seeing Oswald? Do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, some people have mentioned. If I look at Ken Biffle, if I look at Piers Allman, Robert McNeil is close by. They all tell snippets, not direct, but indirectly are snippets of Oswald being there. August Campbell saw him on the first floor. So you have these bits, but there are other signals in some of the documentation, especially with Pauline Sanders and I think one or two more people, when they come into the landing or the vestibule, as it's actually called, they make really specific mention of saying they saw no one there. And I'm going, that doesn't make any sense. Because if I look at the Darnell film, there's people going up the steps already, right way in front of Baker and way in front of Truly. Okay. Truly and Baker, if you look at the picture behind me, the guy with the white Stetson, the Stetson guy, there's a guy in a black suit wearing a hat right behind me. Yeah. So we're talking this guy right above my
Okay,
finger. Yeah. That guy in the background. Yeah. With the hat on. That's why Truly. Okay. And we have people walking up those steps. So to say that there's no one there is complete rubbish. It is
right.
something like making sure that it was, oh no one was there. It was, whereas, and go, why are you saying that? Why are you volunteering this? Because no one asks you, you're volunteering. And that's
Right.
really odd. You're trying to prove a point. But at the same time, I go, if I look at this film, that doesn't make any sense because I've got people going up there
Yeah,
already.
also aren't there records of other people who are on the stairs, and then you have proof, you have the photographic images showing they're standing next
Yeah.
to, yet they
Well,
don't mention the people that they're standing next to.
fair enough. Frazier said 10 years, 10, 12, 13, no, 12, 14 years ago, he said he couldn't recognize it, et cetera, et cetera. Recently, he's been saying that it's not Lee Oswald. But Frazier is very unreliable as a witness. If you go through all his statements, he's all over the place. And I can't take it serious. On top of that, he did it in his book. The original authors who wrote the book walked away from the project. He also made things up. People know that he made things up. I can't take this guy, can't take his word for it. Absolutely not. On top of that, you have to also understand the way was Frazier was treated. Yeah. I mean, he got to a rough treatment when he on that day. And well, being black in those days, that's another good thing either. And Joe Molina was Hispanic and he was part of the GI Forum, which was just a group of Hispanic soldiers who served in the Second World War, who wanted better burial rights and so forth, and just being more recognition for that, a decent thing to ask for and to get, but and were seen as subversives and thought they were being seen as infiltrated by communists. Then you get to Bill Lowry, you start looking into that, and this guy was an informant for the feds. And who reported about everything about the GI Forum in there. And Molina got terrible treatment as well. And those women, well, some of those women were pressured by the FBI. One of them worked for Truly right underneath him, as well as his secretary. You know what? I mean, there's so much in the actual evidence that dispute the official scenario from so many different angles. I mean, the haters are wasting their time because all they have are beliefs. It doesn't go against the evidence. Because the thing is, if it hadn't been a picture, I'd say you've got a point. But I've got the Will Fritz notes where he says it was outside in front with Bill Shelley. I've got the Hostie notes. I've got the Hostie report with Bookout, and I've got Thomas Kelly from the Secret Service from the 23rd, also as a third person saying that Oswald said he was outside in front. Yeah, that's three people, and
Right.
two of and on two different occasions.
Let's say you have travel coming up, summer vacations or weddings abroad, maybe an international work trip. Imagine arriving actually understanding the language, ordering food confidently in restaurants, connecting with locals, and feeling immersed instead of just visiting. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb your new language. No memorizing random vocabulary lists and no relying on translations. Instead, you learn by connecting words, visuals, and meaning in context, the way language is meant to be learned. The Rosetta Stone lessons are easy to fit into your day. They don't take that long. One of my favorite features is True Accent, which helps make sure that you're pronouncing the words correctly based on where you are. For me, I know I've always wanted to go to Italy, and I know that I'll be brushing up on my Italian with Rosetta Stone when I make that trip. With 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more, Rosetta Stone is the go-to tool for real language growth. Learn faster and retain longer. Rosetta Stone immerses you in your new language naturally, helping you think and communicate with confidence. It's not just English translations, so you're truly learning how to speak, listen, and think in your chosen language. There's an intuitive learning process. You start with words, and then you build to phrases, and eventually you progress into full sentences. So if you're ready to learn a new language this spring, visit rosettastone.com/today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/today now and begin your language learning journey. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, but this guy that I know, let's just say, is. So whether you're like me or the guy I know, or you're really into weed, whatever it is, you're about to nerd out big because there's this company called Mood.com, that's changing the way people buy cannabis. Here's the science, and this is the part I love. The reason different cannabis strains make you feel different ways isn't just about THC, it's also based on other components called terpenes. Terpenes influence how your bud tastes and smells, but they also affect what you feel. So one terpene might make you feel uplifted and energetic, and another one makes you relaxed and sleepy. There are dozens of these. So when you have the right combination of terpenes, you can feel social, focused, creative, aroused, chilled out, or whatever. You just go to mood.com, click shop by mood, and that's it. Want to be more social at a party? There's flower for that. Need to focus and get more work done? There's flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and comes in a discreet box. Best of all, everything is backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code JFK. So head to mood.com and get 20% off of your first order with code JFK.
Yeah, it's also true that just looking at the placement of where Prayer Man is on, you know, in that image in the film, he's at the very back of the steps. So you very well, they wouldn't have seen him. I mean, it's quite possible that they didn't see
him. That's another factor, because he might be one of the last ones coming out. But I'll tell you what, the ones that did see him are Fraser. And I also say Roy Edward Lewis also did see him. But we've interviewed Roy Lewis four times. And he says he doesn't know, but he's well trained in being evasive and all that. And you know what? I don't blame these people. If you think about the history of all these witnesses, all that garbage that happened with DPD and all these funny accidents and so forth. I mean, without going into specifics and all that, but just the pressure on these people. You know, these some of these people are now 80 years old, and they go, well, I'll live this long. Why should I blow this now? I don't blame them. And also, here's another thing, and this is why I don't believe the films are going to come out, right? The Lunar Committee and so forth. Nothing's going to happen with these films. Because if these films were to come out, okay, can you just think the upheaval and the garbage that just this creates and the lack of trust? There is already very little trust in society as it is now. But then you just see that. 63 years ago, they were doing it already. Blah, 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 blah.
So mark you down as skeptical that
MVP
is going to turn over the Vigman.
Yeah. I don't believe it. I'll tell you what. I hope somebody's going to prove me wrong. But you know what? I found different things of evidence. So I didn't do anything until late January this year. And at first I thought I'm going to use AI because I want an ironclad and just nail every coffin shut with more nails even than before and just absolutely smash it. And I did that. And then I started going into deblurring and I've been working on that. That's why you see that picture behind me. And it works to a certain extent. It still needs more work, but I'll get there at some point. And on top of that, more time on research and finding documents and going through documents. So I found something that's almost as important as the interrogation notes I found. And this is a document, and you're the first one who gets to know this.
My man.
The palm print. So the palm print is taken from Oswald on November the 22nd, around 9 o'clock in the evening. And then the evidence is handed over to the feds. And we're talking about the rifle, Oswald's shirt, the pistol, etc., etc., etc. Now, there's been a lot of hoo-ha over the decades about the palm print, whether the palm print was included, as in on the rifle itself, underneath the barrel, or not. A lot of people that were involved, yes, it was there. We did this, we did that, blah 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 blah. Now, Vince Drain is one of Hoover's favorites. He was given a task of taking it all with him to Washington in a plane, on a plane. And he picks it up after Oswald's and Henry Wade's press conference, because he's still photographed inside the group, standing right next to Wade. And he picks up the rifle and the stuff and the shirt. Now, until recently, I never saw a list of this. And I went to the Mary Farrell site, and by accident, after going through 800 odd files, I found a document. I was like, oh, beautiful. And like Donald would say, beautiful. And it would just basically be an inventory list of the evidence, but also fingerprints. Now, it mentions fingerprints, but it doesn't mention no palm print, nothing. So if you don't have a palm print on that rifle on the 22nd, when that rifle is going, and then it's being tested, yeah, by the foremost forensic expert of the FBI, who can't find diddly squat either, yeah, right, and only finds the fingerprints that have been pointed out by Mr. Day, all day, and then you start looking in all the paperwork, and that palm print doesn't appear until after the rifle's coming back to Dallas again. Yeah, you know that scene in Oliver Stone's film where they have Gary Oldman lying dead, yeah, in the coffin, and they just take his hand and just put that palm print on there. That's what happened. That's what happened. I mean, that's fake, but I'm telling you, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. There is no evidence that there was a palm print on the 22nd. So hold on. We don't have a Heidel ID on the 22nd. We don't have a Heidel name with the order until 7:30 on the 23rd as well. Then we don't have a palm print. Yeah? So the rifle that's going to Washington has got absolutely zero connectivity with Lee Harvey Oswald at that point. Yet, he is charged with assassinating the president after his mugshots and his second set of fingerprints and palm prints, because the DPD had given all theirs, the ones that they actually done at 9 o'clock in the evening, they were all gone. So after 12 o'clock, they had to make a new set. So there might have been a discrepancy of about half an hour that there were no files of fingerprints and palm prints, but they had to redo all these sets. They had nothing. They had absolutely nothing on Oswald.
Yeah, I always remember thinking that was so crazy when I read about the palm print arriving on an index card like 6 days later. It was kind
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, and then the Selective Service card as well. The Selective
Right.
Service card didn't appear because they get all the evidence sent over, but the Selective Service card with the so-called Heidel la-di-da isn't there. And then it gets sent a few days later.
Right. Quickly, if I, just to go back to Prayer Man.
Yeah.
So one thing we haven't talked about is your methodology, which I really, really respected. It the it's kind of like when you came up with a plan, it was, you're probably thinking, well, this is going to be a whole thing. But you know, the idea that you're going to have to go through all the witnesses, figure out exactly where each person
Yeah.
was. And then it's
Yeah.
basically a process of elimination. And one
Well,
important part of that, one important part is that there's no strangers there. We know that it's not a stranger, and you can talk about that, but can you also rule out Sarah Stanton, who is sort of the alternative person
yeah,
that's.
totally. Sarah Stanton was very short. She's 5 or 5'1", and she weighed 300 pounds. Yeah, heavy set lady, short, blonde hair. That already disqualifies her. It disqualifies her. And on top of that, I found her in the Weidman frame. She can be seen in the Weidman frame, standing next to Pauline Sanders, as per statement. Bill Frazier said also. I know this comes from Brian Doyle. He's one of the worst trolls in this whole business. Yeah, this is somebody who's got zero evidence but a million beliefs, and he can never back anything of it up. Always because he sees something. Total waste of time. My book has got 1,200 sources.
Very, very well sourced, and you also are pointing out things that everyone can see when they go look at the source materials
Yes,
themselves.
I
So.
wanted that. That was one thing with putting print and digital together tighter. I vetted this idea with about two or three other authors, and they all went, "Oh, that's a really good idea." And I was like, "I don't understand why nobody thought of this because I just want." Because my original thing were papers before I did the books. Before I did the book, I did four papers and everything was interactively linked. There were just PDFs and you could just click on the link and it would take you through. And I was like, well, for the Kindle, I'll have that included. But for the print, I've got to make sure. And I thought, yeah, I'll make some chapters and put those pages on the website where all the links, all the documentation is linked to. There's
Yeah.
going to be for the second edition, I'm looking at least between 150 to 200 extra bits in there. So I've got since November last year, I've gotten a ton of stuff and things found, and I just went, oh yeah, that piece will fit in there, and that nails that down, and that's even more. But you know what? The fact that there's no Heidel ID, there's no Heidel order, there's no palm print, yeah. I mean, forget about Prayer Man. You know, just think about the evidence against Oswald at
Right.
that moment in time. You don't have it. Yet you're shouting that you've got it, but you don't have it at all. The evidence
I mean,
clearly states, that's just not me going, oh, I'm paraphrasing here. But no, the evidence says it isn't there. It's shocking.
Hoover himself said that it's not very, very strong. That's what he said to
No.
LBJ the next morning.
Yeah, they had to help him, and they did. They had to help, and they
Yeah.
did big time because the DPD couldn't close it.
I want to just revisit two witnesses because these were new to me and they're really, really important. Okes Campbell and Kent Biffle, if we could just talk about them, because basically they're definitively putting Oswald on the first
On the first floor,
floor right after it happened. So could
yeah,
you just
but
talk
so did
through what they each said?
So did Carolyn Arnold.
Right.
Carolyn Arnold said that on the 26th of November, an FBI statement. And Roy Truly at first said also something along those words that he basically saw him on the first floor. And if you look at everything regarding departure from the TSBD, a lot of people say, oh, he just escaped. Now, there's a thing that we refer to and call the Revel list, which is referring to Jack Revel of the Criminal Intelligence Division, the CID. This is WP Ganaway, Pat Ganaway. And these guys were looking for subversives and so forth. Well, there's a list of the people that were in the TSBD and left the building. Now, there's no time, but there's name, address. I don't know if there's a phone number, but details like that. And you see handwriting on it as well. And Oswald is on the top of that list. Oswald is the first person that left the TSBD. And you see the TSBD, like, when did that get, like, the front door get locked? About 8, 10, maybe 12 minutes after the shooting. And Oswald has been standing around there, and he wanted to get out. And he's also later on seen running down the grassy patch right in front of the knoll and getting into that Nash Rambler by Roger Craig and one or two more that saw somebody who looked like Oswald get in that car. You know, when you start gathering all the evidence and you go, yeah, it can't be. Well, and you go, oh, there's more. Oh, hold on a minute. There's even more. And every time I think, oh, I've got it. I'm done. I said it 5 years ago. I'm done. No, tons more. There's tons more all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not even looking at the people that did interviews with these people. I'm just looking at the documentation and the FBI especially, you know. It's ridiculous,
yeah, sure,
how much stuff there is.
Okus Campbell specifically,
yeah,
he was manager and he was a VP, right, at this,
yeah,
public,
yeah, vice president, yeah.
He said that he raced back into the building after the shots and he saw Oswald in a small storage room on the first floor. Is that,
yeah,
to the New York Herald Tribune? Is that right?
Yeah,
the
on
day?
The 26th. Yeah, on the 23rd. Yeah.
What a huge piece of evidence that I can't believe that's very obscure and it's so important.
You know what? That's like all the newspapers there. A lot of it comes without sources. They catch these things and they just write it down. And, you know, what some people say is not a byline. But here's the thing. If I have Trulli, I have Campbell, I have Ken Biffle, I've got Robert McNeil, and I've got Pierce Allman. And you start looking at all these stories, what they did, which phone they went to. Then you get the military intelligence guy. Just forget his name, who also walks in and tells, hey, get off the phone. I need the phone. So slowly, you know, that's the whole thing. You just need to collect more and more and more and more. So
yeah.
I'll tell you what, I've got also been given about 20 odd hours of KRLD film footage. Now imagine CCTV cameras, although back in the day they were that big and this wide and on a tripod and bulky cameras with thick cables coming out. And they had two of them in the corridor. And they were just practically next to each other in that thin, slim corridor. How wide would it have been? 6 feet, if that. And they are filming everything that's happening. All right next from the door that leads to the elevator, if Oswald has to go to jail, or he goes downstairs for identification lineups, and he goes to room 317. So it's like Valhalla when it comes to all the traffic of the reporters, the photographers, the cameramen, the secretaries. We're talking Secret Service agents, FBI, and so I've already found Hosty in some footage. And this I'm going to use in conjunction with my timeline that I already have put together in my book, especially with the interrogations. And that basically will enable me to see who did what and who was where and trying to and just stitch that all together. Oh, it's going to be beautiful. Yeah. So,
well, you've done some really strong work in just shining a light on how much evidence is there. To
unbelievable.
I'll say for me, when I first started to look at this theory, I guess it still is, we'll call it. I wasn't a fan of it. Sorry, Tupac. I wasn't a fan of it at first. I sort of prejudged it, I guess, because I'm thinking I personally am not good at looking at grainy images and kind of seeing what's there with the Rorschach test. But that's not the story. The story is all of the other evidence, and also the grainy image looks like Oswald.
The grainy image is the icing on the cake. It's as simple as that. The evidence speaks for itself. You see, there's no opinions. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to add anything. The evidence speaks for itself. And that's what's going to happen with the second edition. It's just going to get even harder. People are just going to get slapped left, right, and center with evidence. So they're sick of it.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, no,
You know that I'm not afraid to name a book in a violent way, the JFK assassination chokehold. So I think if you could have JFK assassination, whatever, what did you say? Hammering in. That was how you described it earlier. That was good.
just hammer it in. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to throw out real quick, that I was gonna talk to you about today, but I didn't have time to dive in and
That's cool.
research it, so I didn't want to, and I've already covered it previously, which is the Raleigh call. And I want to give you a shout out for taking a contrarian
Didn't
in
happen.
conspiracy group position
Didn't
on
happen.
it. And yeah, I want to look at it. I want to look at it before I dive deep. But
Well, I'll tell you
your
what, just go to my
quick
website
overview. Yeah.
and click on diary and then click in the search box on the top right and just type in Raleigh, and there will be only one post that concerns the Raleigh call. And I suggest you read that, and I suggest you check out all the evidence. Yeah. Because the whole thing is plastered full with evidence. And the thing is, what makes the Raleigh call doubt is that there's no coherent unity between the ladies of who was there, who did what, who said what, and so forth. They all contradict each other. On top of that, the note itself is a Fugazi. It's been written over many, many times. It's not just, it looks like a piece of original writing. Why the hell do they have to write three or four times over the same thing, over the same signature? And on top of that, they speak about Lavelle listening in. So the biggest problem with all these bits about those canceling the phone calls is contrary to the phone calls that Oswald had. You see, there are reports of Oswald that Oswald had a phone call and had another phone call, and he had a phone call for 45 minutes. We don't know what that's about, but his phone calls were recorded. So what's all the woo? Yeah, to a guy who's a total drunk. Yeah, he was a complete drunk. And people, conspiracy theorists, start putting things together as in, yeah, but he was in Japan. And he was working for the central for intelligence in what, 5 years before Oswald was there. And I'm going, so what's the connection here? And they can't, other than that, they can't give me the connection. The problem is that none of the evidence supports that call, but people believe this, and people have been pushing this through like it's something that's happened, and it hasn't. It's the same as the roll call inside the Texas School Book Depository. It's another Fugazi. What's the point of having a roll call when at least half of all the people that were inside that building weren't there? Yeah. And then to say, like, no, we just did the workers. Why the workers? What, a guy in a suit can't get a rifle and start shooting at the president? What kind of
Right.
stupid argumentation is this? No, we'll just get the laborers and we'll leave
Right.
the women as well. Yeah, we'll forget about women snipers. That's not happening in Dallas either. Okay,
Right.
but doesn't make much sense. And you know, here's the thing. Every time you look at something and they say, well, it's such and such, and you go, first of all, let's just use a firm dose of common sense on this just for a second. Truly, and the second floor lunchroom encounter truly ran ahead of Baker. Think about it. Marion Baker, gun drawn. Truly, officer, come. I'll guide you up those stairs, walking ahead when a gunman, possible gunman, could be coming down the stairs at the same time. Excuse me, were you born yesterday? Right. So if you just think about that and you go, that was my thing for me to investigate the second floor lunchroom encounter. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. And then later on, I found statements where he said that Baker walked in front of him instead of him walking in front of Baker. They contradict each other all the time.
Well, I look forward to reading your Raleigh article in depth, and I'd love to have you on again to talk through that, because I'm sure there are just, a lot of questions of like, well, if you're saying this, then what about this? Then what about this? And then
I
we
let
can
the evidence do
tackle.
the talking.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm that's
My
I
opinion
respect that
is,
about you.
my opinion doesn't count.
Yeah.
You know what? The only thing that counts is the evidence. And I post these things and I go, well, I think it's pretty clear. It's just like this thing with the palm print. It's pretty clear now. I mean, it was already leaning towards that for 90%, but now with this one document, I just go, and this is the document that was made after the stuff was transferred. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, there's no mention of a palm print whatsoever. And the thing is, like that one-to-one between Carl Day and Drain, it only discusses the fingerprints near the trigger guard. End of story. To me, that's end of story. So
Man, I've learned a lot by reading your book and talking
thank
to you,
you.
man. So,
Yeah.
definitely want to have you on again sometime.
Oh yeah, anytime. You just let me know. We'll do it again.
All
No
right, good
problem.
stuff, Bart.
All right.
Bart Camp, you're the man.